but I remember meeting an Orthodox bishop for the first time. And to me, having read, you know, St. Ignatius of Antioch and his incarnation of how a bishop should be in himself, in his life, and in his writings, and other bishops as well, St. Polycarp of Smyrna and others, I saw in this Orthodox, this modern Orthodox bishop, or not modern, you know, but he was there standing in front of me, and I saw that tradition still being alive.
Okay, welcome everyone to the Orthodox Christian Podcast. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Father Mikhail Feldhammer. And for everyone watching or listening, Father Mikhail, why don't you take a second to introduce yourself and tell everyone what you spend your time doing?
Yes, my name is Mikhail Feldhammer. I am a Swedish-born priest in the Antiochian Church in Sweden, Antiochian Orthodox Church in Sweden. I serve as the priest of Holy Resurrection Orthodox Church in Gothenburg, which is the second largest city of Sweden, based on the west coast. And we are a mission, you might say. We have approximately 40 persons visiting our liturgies on the Sundays, mainly converts, a few cradle Orthodox as well. So that's what I do for the most part of my time. I have a wife, I have three kids, we live at a farm, we have some animals, some chicken, some sheep. I love reading. So that's me.
Wonderful. And why don't you tell us how you encountered Orthodoxy to begin with? And if you were raised in a religious family or household, tell us a little bit about that as well.
Yeah. Well, I was raised in a Christian home. My father is a priest in the Lutheran State Church of Sweden, which is the dominant church here, or a denomination, or however you want to call it. It has been as such from the 1500s and onwards. And my mom also works in a Christian organization, a charismatic Christian organization, charismatic infused with liturgical traditions as well. So it's not charismaniacs, as I've heard some say, but it's a quite sound organization. So I grew up in the Christian religion, given my mom's engagement in that particular charismatic organization, I were able to experience firsthand various different Christian traditions from an early age. And in our family, we had a great respect for the older Christian traditions. My mom and dad talked always with respect of the Roman Catholic Church, the Armenian Orthodox Church, and so on. So I was not raised, as I can imagine some people in the States or other places were, with a, inherited disrespect or disregard for older traditions, rather the opposite, in fact. So, and that helped me later on in my life as I began to study the Orthodox Church, but that's, I'm getting ahead of myself. I was going to become a priest as my father and my grandfather in the Lutheran tradition. And I started to, I began studies at the University of Gothenburg. But during my studies, I came across the Orthodox Church in various ways. And I thought that maybe I could implement what I've found in a sort of a smorgasbord and pick and choose certain things and implement them in my service as a Lutheran priest. But eventually, quite quickly, I think, I realized that this is not something that you pick and choose from, but something that you must devote yourself wholeheartedly to. And Yeah, I realized that. It's a story in and of itself. I was preparing to become a priest, as I said, in the Lutheran Church, but I was a bit too traditional, you might say. So I had some problems with the Lutheran Bishop of Gothenburg. Not problems like we had a fight or anything like that, not at all, but we had good constructive conversation about the matter. In fact, it was the matter of whether female priests were a thing, were a Christian thing. I didn't think so, but he thought so, and the Lutheran Church thinks so. So I wanted them to change, and they wanted me to change, and neither of us wanted to change. So that road eventually became unrealistic for me and for them. But at the same time as I was having those conversations with the Lutheran bishop, I attended and I dug into and tried to learn as much as I could about the Orthodox Church. I read books about from the Church Fathers. I visited liturgies. And I fell in love with the Orthodox tradition, and I tried to get to know as much as I could. And at one time, I went to a conference with Orthodox speakers. It was called the Chrysostom Conference. I don't remember very much of the content of the lectures themselves, but I remember meeting an Orthodox bishop for the first time. And to me, having read, St. Ignatius of Antioch and his incarnation of how a bishop should be in himself, in his life, and in his writings, and other bishops as well, St. Polycarp of Smyrna and others, I saw in this modern Orthodox bishop, or not modern, but he was there standing in front of me, and I saw that tradition still being alive, so to speak. And that made an impression on me, not just, rationally, but in my soul, in my heart. And the same afternoon, I had an appointment with a Lutheran bishop, who, even though he's a very nice man, he was not, the same incarnation of an ancient holy bishop, so to speak. So that was one of the tipping points for me when I realized that this is something that I need to pursue wholeheartedly. And at that time, I didn't know where I would end up or anything like that, but I knew for myself that I'm not going to be a priest. I cannot be a priest in the Lutheran Church of Sweden. I want to become Orthodox, and I wanted to become a priest, but I had no, insurance that was going to happen in any way at that time. Anyway, I biked home to my wife and told her that this had happened, and she was not there yet, but eventually she was on board as well. So, yeah. Anything you want to ask about that?
Yes, I'll ask a couple of things. But the first thing is just more of a reflection on the fact that it was someone that you came across, this Orthodox bishop, who embodied Christ in a particular way and what it meant to be a bishop in the Orthodox Church, as you mentioned, this relation to this ancient Christian figure and ancient Christian writing that was really brought forward in this person. And it reminds me of how Christianity, there's this nice emphasis, I think, in Orthodoxy on the actual embodiment of the faith, and that the theological principles or notions we have, like the Trinity and God being incarnate as both man and God, these things emerge not because people are just sitting down at a desk pondering and writing them out, but it's actually the actual experience with Christ that draws these things out. And I think that this is the right place to put the emphasis, because otherwise these dogmas and doctrines, they can become very hollow and meaningless. But But if we place them in the encounter with real divinity, then it suddenly begins to make sense. And so I think that this is sort of a theme in Orthodoxy, more broadly speaking, and I like how your life shows this to be the case. Maybe first of all, I'll just ask, do you think that that's a fair way to characterize it?
Indeed. And I would like to add also my experience with this bishop. It's similar also to my first experience, or rather my second experience, actually, of a divine liturgy. When I came there and I was prepared with reading of the Holy Fathers, and I could recognize their not only their words, but also their ways of doing theology in theology proper, in the language of the liturgy and in the symbolism of the liturgy. So it's the same thing that you just drew out. The same thing happened also in my meeting with the liturgical tradition. So I'll just like to stress what you said. It's an incarnational faith, the Orthodox faith. And I'm quite happy actually that I'm that old that I'm not... I've not had my main influence via the internet, but I've had the opportunity to meet some of my first encounters have been flesh and bones encounters with people and with the holy tradition. So I'm quite happy for that.
Mm-hmm. So just a couple of clarifying thoughts on your upbringing. One was you mentioned your mom is involved in this charismatic group, and your father is a Lutheran minister. So did you grow up going to both of these churches, or was it predominantly the Lutheran church that you attended?
They're the same church. This charismatic organization is part of the Lutheran church, one might say. It's an organization of its own, but it's in this tradition. I think it came to Sweden from the Anglican church in Great Britain, and they took it over here, and it began in the early 80s. Again, it's not like, you know, the charismaniac type of thing, but it's they wanted to infuse the sometimes rather stale Lutheran tradition with the life of the charismatic expressions. So if you can imagine, and also the Lutheran tradition in Sweden is quite Catholic in its how you would experience it. So imagine a charismatic Roman Catholic service, maybe that would be a way to describe it. So, but we went to my dad's church, where he was the priest.
Okay. And also from what I know about Sweden and maybe generally in the Nordic countries, it is quite secular. It might be similar, like I live in British Columbia, Canada, which of all the provinces, I'm pretty sure is the most secular. And I'm wondering, when you're growing up, are there many people around you that are also churchgoers, like your friends around you? Or
oh, no.
Are you sort of unusual in that respect?
Yeah, I'm quite unusual. Where I grew up, it was quite a small town, maybe 3,000 to 5,000 inhabitants in the local city center. And I was known as the minister's boy, the preacher's boy, with a certain derogative slur to it. But it wasn't too bad though. But I had almost no Christian friends, I would say. It was not until it was time for my confirmation, which in the Lutheran tradition is done at age 14, 15, and I went away on a camp. And stay there for first 1 week, then 1 week, and then 3 weeks in a row in the summer. So that was a place to find new Christian contacts and friends. But Sweden is indeed quite secular. I don't know about British Columbia, but even though we are secular here, that's not the same as people... are not religious. People are really seeking and trying out various different things. So when you study the secularization of Sweden, you have to realize that the institutional church is not very strong, but religion is still very, very strong, and even secular religion, like you know, feminism or veganism or certain types of ideologies that has become substitutes for traditional religious expressions. It's very strong, so people are seeking indeed. But the Lutheran Church, I think, is losing many of its members, and other groups are gaining, among them the Orthodox Church.
Right. Yes. Yes. I think it would be similar in the religious landscape here, where, for lack of a better term, wokeism is the religion of the day, and people will find some sort of half truths in there. And it seems like it's this child almost of a twisted Protestantism, that there's lots of things that are actually similar, but in a twisted and like half-life form. It's like a zombie version of Protestantism. So,
wow. Yeah.
If you can put it that way. So I'm wondering, when you start to become interested in Orthodoxy, what this process looks like in terms of, you said your wife wasn't initially as interested, but also, I mean, your father is a Lutheran minister, so I don't know if he was maybe sad that you weren't continuing in the same pattern as him, or maybe the exact same pattern. I mean, you're still a priest in a church, but just not the same church. So how did the rest of this journey towards Orthodoxy unfold?
So my wife was on board theologically. One of our first books that we read together was Callistus Ware, Metropolitan Callistus Ware of Blessed Memories, his the Orthodox Church. So we're not unique in that regard. So she was on board theologically with, I'd say, almost everything. And she grew up in a more free church background, sort of, you know, Jesus movement type of church. But she, as I think many women are, the theological thing is not the main thing that would convince a woman to, or most women, I think, to consider joining the Orthodox Church or another church body of any kind. Rather it's the relational aspect. And that was not optimal in Gothenburg at the time. So we had a lot of conversations about becoming Orthodox, to and fro, or how you say it, for a couple of years. But eventually we went to a conference which had a theme of the Church of Christ. It was a Lutheran conference, but it was ecumenical in that regard. And there was an Orthodox priest speaking about how the body of Christ cannot be divided. And he was making a claim for the Orthodox ecclesiological view of things. And during that lecture, my wife experienced God speaking to her that this is your path. And ever since, we took the step and we became Orthodox. So I'm thankful to God for that. I did not want to convert on my own because I wanted to wait for her. At the time, we did not have any children, and I didn't want us to go to separate churches on Sundays. So I wanted to wait for her, but I was quite convinced for myself that this is where we are going. As for my parents, they were quite happy, I would say, that we became Orthodox. There has not been any real problem. The only thing is that we do not share, or they do not share, the Orthodox view of who can receive the sacrament and not, of course. So that's quite natural. So I think that if they could decide things, they would have me come to their Eucharist, and they would want me to accept them at our Eucharist. But that's not the way things work in our church. No, they were quite happy for our conversation, and they are they know about the problems in the Lutheran Church of Sweden, which are similar to the Episcopal Church in North America, I think. You would have the same things that you struggle with. And they know that the Orthodox Church is a safe haven and that it will remain steadfast and remain loyal to the tradition, the life of the Holy Spirit during the ages. So, yeah, they are quite happy.
Okay. And then in that period in between, when you have decided that Lutheran priesthood is not the right option, but you're still figuring out whether your wife is willing to go in the direction of Orthodoxy, do you have a different kind of job? Like, how are you sustaining yourself in this period? And then also, are you attending an Orthodox church occasionally, or what did that look like?
So I was doing my studies, my theological studies at the University of Gothenburg, and I had my income mainly from student loans. we were part of a Lutheran church on the other side of town, and they had their services in the afternoon, I think around 4 o'clock, which made it possible for me to attend the liturgy whenever that was served in Swedish, which was about once a month, I think. So I would take my bike to that liturgy first thing on that Sunday morning, and then we would go in the afternoon to the other church. So that's how it worked out. And this Orthodox church, it was an old priest monk that came to Gothenburg once a month. They borrowed a church from the Lutheran church. They put up chairs to make an iconostasis, and they put on icons, you know, with their back towards the back of the chair. Mm. And it was, you know, some people go to Mount Athos or visit Greece or, you know, see the old beautiful churches from the 14th century or something like that. It was not like that for me. I was too poor to travel, and it was a very simple experience, to put it diplomatically, but nonetheless, it was an incarnation of the faith that had been handed down, even in that context in Gothenburg. And I'm so happy and thankful for this priest and that congregation.
Mm-hmm. So when you eventually joined the Orthodox Church, what were the reasons? Like, if someone asked you, why not stay Lutheran? What is so great about this Orthodox Church that you've encountered? I mean, you've mentioned one in the sense that you found something that seemed to really embody the history of Christianity and indeed Christ himself, but would there be other reasons that you would give in terms of your joining Orthodoxy?
Well, all reasons go together in some way. They go together in the question, will this church be like an ark that will bring you to salvation? And the church, if I would begin with the negative aspects, you know, something made me look for other options. And that was the liberal theology of the Lutheran Church, at least the official Lutheran Church. And I could see that theology was a fruit of the Protestant dogma, or how you want to say it, sola scriptura, the Bible alone, which really, when you think about it, comes down to the subject reader alone. You're your own authority, your own pope, so to speak, in deciding whether or not you're going to believe this or that doctrine, whether or not you're going to listen to this or that scriptural passage. And that's one fruit of that doctrine is the liberal theology. The other fruit is, you know, literal fundamentalism, which is equally bad and equally not life-giving. And so that ruled out all Protestant alternatives for me quite early on, because that is a fundamental part of Protestantism, the Bible alone as the authority for the church. And I thought that, because in Sweden we have various conservative groups that have reacted towards the liberal theology of the Lutheran Church, and they, I would say that I know these people, and they are good people, and they are pious Christians for the most part. But as I see it, when studying church history, they will end up, I think, in the same spot that the Lutheran Church of Sweden is now. Just give it a couple of years, 40, 50 years, and they will have the same issues that they will deal with. So they need to deal with the, I would say, heresy of sola scriptura, because that will not lead to salvation for people. That's one of the main negative aspects that drove me away from somewhere. And the positive aspects, I've already alluded a bit to them, but I found through my studies and through my experiences the genuine apostolic Christian faith. I could recognize not only a bishop, not only the liturgy, but a way to relate to the faith on a larger scale, or a broader scale in the Orthodox Church. The way you did the Christian faith was similar to, in the Orthodox Church, was similar to what I've read in the Apostolic Fathers and the Cappadocians, or the Holy Fathers of later ages. I could see a red line through history where this way of doing faith was preserved, and eventually I could see that it was still alive and well in the Orthodox Church. The Roman Catholic Church was never an option for me because of the scholastic sidestep away from the tradition. That's one of the main things. And the Pope and the Filioque, I mean, it's quite obvious that if you add something to the faith, that's something added that should not be there. And various other things. It was never an option because it was not attractive to me.
Well put. So just to summarize, it sounds like with Protestantism, you found that it wasn't just individual instantiations of Protestantism that were problematic, but it was something systemic to the very method of Protestantism that would cause problems regardless of these breakaway groups, that even if they had a more traditional faith for a time.
It's one thing for me personally, you know, I'm going to be around here maybe say 40 years more if God willing, but then I have kids and they will have kids, and where will I leave them? In what context will I leave them? And I know that as an Orthodox believer, they will be, I pray to God, they will remain in the Orthodox tradition, and it will be the same tradition. They will hand on the same, you know, spiritual medicine to my kids and grandkids. And I'm not sure that that's going to be the case in the Lutheran or any Protestant tradition. I mean, look at the Methodists in the States at the moment. It's havoc, as it seems, at least from the news that trickle down to us here in Sweden. So that's just one example. Sorry, please go on.
Yes, well, and that's an excellent point, that if you have a family, what are you leaving with them? And is it something that is properly sacramental in the sense that God and the world meet in the tradition? Because we do live in an increasingly secular society in the West, at least, and God and the world are drifting apart in people's conception of things. And so it seems necessary to instill, not only in ourselves, but in those who will come after us, how to see the world in a way where God and the world are actually still connected, and not to just see things as pure material, but to see it as actually infused with the Spirit of God, and that we only exist because we participate in God. But you need a tradition that is actually going to instill that in people as the main thing, not just as an accidental thing. And I think that Orthodoxy arguably is the most sacramental. Like, we have the most things where God and the world are tangibly connecting, most notably in the Eucharist, which is actually the body and blood of Christ. We don't know how. We're not going to explain it. As you mentioned, we don't get into the scholasticism of exactly what is the mechanism by which God is present, but we trust that God is present. It seems similar to Christ's resurrection from the dead. We don't know how, like, what happened when he died and now he's back, but we trust that actually this is God himself that has appeared to us, and it changes the nature of reality. So I'm wondering if you've encountered the Orthodox Church in your story, you've joined it at this point. Were there some challenges that you initially had to overcome in joining Orthodoxy, or perhaps there have been some challenges along the way that you've had to overcome?
Well, yes, there have been challenges along the way. But speaking for myself, I've been quite convinced that this is the road laid out for me. And I've had faith that God will provide and see me through however he wants. So I'm very thankful to him that he showed me the Orthodox Church, and he made a path for me and my family. I'm happy that he saved me from becoming a Lutheran minister, because sometimes I think I would be devoured by, you know, prideful anger seeing the events happening. So I'm happy for that and thankful for that. When we became Orthodox, we became so in the Antiochian Orthodox Church, and that was not really represented in Sweden at the time. I came in contact with the Antiochian Deanery in Great Britain and Ireland, as it was called then. Now it's an archdiocese under Metropolitan Siloan. So I was guided by them, the priests there, in the early years of our small mission. So we had what is now Holy Resurrection in Gothenburg is started out with me and my wife and Father Herman Fields and his wife Anna, Churia Anna, praying a Reader's Vespers service in our living room where we lived at the time. We put a piece of red cloth over our stereo and we put two icons on that red cloth, and we, you know, just started to pray. And we did so regularly every Sunday, and got to familiarize ourselves with the liturgical tradition in that way. And we always invited people to come and, you know, join us in prayer. It was not the Eucharist. It was not a beautiful church or anything. It was cake afterwards. So we got that at least. And so that's how it started. And we had to build up what we have now from the very, I don't know how you say it, you know, from the grounds up. So we had nothing. So, it has been some challenges during the way, making contact with other Antiochians in Sweden, and establishing contact with priests and things like that. But it has worked out, thank God, for the best, for the most part.
Are there other jurisdictions of the Orthodox Church that are represented in Sweden? And is there a larger one, or are they all quite small?
They are a few jurisdictions here. We have the Greek of the Ecumenical Patriarch, the Metropolis of Sweden, and they are quite Greek. We have the Serbian Church. It's also one of the largest here. There came a large group of immigrants in the 60s and 70s, also in the 90s. So especially in Gothenburg, there's a very lively parish that we have good contact with. and they bought the church from the Lutheran church here, and they remade it and painted icons on the wall and everything. So it's very beautiful. I was ordained a priest in that church. We borrowed it for that particular occasion. We have the Romanians, very friendly and quite large as well, quite a large group. The Macedonian church, there's a small Georgian contingent. What do we have? I mean, we have very small Russian groups as well. There's a parish in Stockholm and other places as well. In Gothenburg, there is no Russian parish, but they go to the Serbian church. Or maybe there is a parish, but, you know, they don't own a church, and the priest comes from Stockholm every once in a while. So they go to the Serbian church because it's, you know, a Slavic-speaking church, and I think they feel at home there. So that's, I would say, those are the main groups here. And the Antiochian church also. It's been around for 14, 15 years officially.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it sounds from what you're describing that the other jurisdictions at this point are more serving as communities for migrants from other places in Europe to Sweden. And perhaps I could be getting this wrong, but it sounds like maybe the Antiochian is a little more outward facing and trying to be Swedish appropriately and have connections with people in the local community. Is that right?
Yeah, basically. But I would add to it that I think that the Swedish speaking missionary work that has been done in Sweden has been done by various groups. And important work has been done in a deanery in the Serbian church. So there's been a Swedish, or rather the first Swedish speaking priest came in the 1960s. So he laid some foundational work, which was continued by faithful priests up until today. None of the Swedish speaking groups are very large. I would say that the growth has come recently, maybe during the last 5 or 6 years or something. Before that, I might be wrong, but I think my impression is that there was an occasional conversion here and there. As you said about the other groups, yes, they are quite focused on their ethnical group. I don't know why that is, but I think that in North America, the immigration goes further back in history, which has made many more generations of Orthodox up until this point. Maybe we are 100 years behind you guys in Sweden. And add to that also the fact that we are quite close to the traditional homelands. It's not difficult for someone to go to Serbia here, you know, just over the weekend even. Or we have parishioners that go back to Lebanon and spend the whole summer there with family and friends. And I don't know if that's the case also in North America, but I think that makes the process a bit slower here.
Right. Yes. Yeah. There's the close proximity. And at this point with your guys' community, two questions that come to mind. One is, is it large enough at this point where you are able to devote the majority of your time to being a priest? Or I know in many parishes when they're in this stage, the priest must actually have a secondary job to support themselves and their family. So that's one question. And then the second question is, I was just talking with another priest in Canada, and we were discussing how to engage with the society in a way that on one hand is faithful to Orthodox tradition and what has been passed down, but also in a way that is intelligible, that they can connect with it, so that it's in the language that they use, that even the saints that are emphasized are saints that people are able to connect with. And so I'd just be curious about how you are applying Orthodox tradition in Sweden, and whether you think that there's some unique emphases that are nevertheless faithful to the tradition that's being passed on. So maybe we'll start with the vocation question and then the tradition question.
Yeah, yeah. So I did have a part-time job. I was driving a truck, not a lorry truck, but a small pick truck. I don't know how it, but...
A pickup truck.
Inside a warehouse, electrical pickup truck of sorts.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know the correct word, but anyway. So I was doing that a couple of days a week. But up until a little more than a year, I was able to leave that behind. And I'm now, my job
is like full time.
Full time, 75%.
Okay.
With the church, actually 65, and then 10% is funded by a translation project of the Synaxaria from Simon Opetra at Mount Athos. So I work with that as well. So that's the funding question. I'm very happy and thankful that we are able to fund me as a priest. The other question, how to, you know, show the faith and make it relatable to Swedes. That has been a part of our mission ever since the beginning. And there's various ways, of course, that you can do that and various levels that upon that where that work is being done. So one of the first things that we've tried in made in our church is we've tried not to have a very archaic Swedish, but we've tried to apply a reverent and yet modern Swedish. So we've used a translation of the liturgy that has come to us from the Finnish Orthodox Church. There's a contingent of Swedish-speaking Finnish citizens, and the Church of Finland has made very good translations, in my opinion, of the liturgy that we use. So I'm very happy for that. We've always had every year a course, introductory course of the Orthodox Church, the Orthodox faith, and it continues up still today. The number of people joining has only grown, and we are about, I would say, 20 to 30 persons every year going and completing this class. And some of them are also, you know, taking the step to be baptized or chrismated into the Orthodox Church. Chrismation is a tradition that is applied in the Antiochian Church here. I have had a blog. I don't know if anyone reads blogs anymore, but I still put out some material there every now and then. A couple of years back, 4 years now, I started a podcast, which was at the time the only one, the only Orthodox podcast in Swedish. And I tried to cover various topics, and I still do. So I'm beginning to, I'm closing in on my 100th episode at the moment. So I need to do something big there, but I haven't got a clue yet what I will do. So we try, and we also, I have Bible study, and regularly try to go through the Bible in according to the Orthodox tradition, where I lift out various quotes and exegetical passages from the Holy Fathers that try to, that, you know, put light on the scriptures. And I also add how that particular scriptural passage is used in a liturgical context, and try to show the attendants what we can learn from that. And it's very helpful for me as well. It's very helpful. So those are a few things. I've been on the state television here in Sweden having a small service. I've been on one of the biggest podcasts here talking about the Orthodox faith. So I would say that there's a growing interest in the Orthodox Church, and I'm happy to be able to present it in, I think, a way that many people can relate. I hope so, at least.
And do you find that people, like Swedish people that come to the church that are interested in Orthodoxy, maybe certain things that they generally appreciate about the Orthodox tradition, as well as other things that are maybe a little unusual at first that you have to give some explanations on?
Both. You know, all kinds of people come to our church, really all kinds of people. So we have people coming from Christian backgrounds, and backgrounds in plural, because, you know, we had a brother coming from a sort of a King James only online Baptist, radical Baptist type of context. But he saw the futility in that and turned, I don't know, really, I can't remember how. I think he read the fathers as well, you know, the apostolic fathers, and he saw that, well, they didn't use King James. So jokes aside, but so he came from that background. We have people coming from similar backgrounds as I did. We have former Roman Catholics that started to look for a safe haven again in the chaotic times. That is that I think a few Catholics are experiencing now. And, you know, we have people that have come from charismatic backgrounds of a more, a little bit more crazy variety, and they've been burnt spiritually by that, and they found a good home for their spiritual life in the Orthodox Church. We have people coming from New Age backgrounds. You know, we have one lady that came, she wanted to study the Eastern iconographic tradition, something, you know, exotic that she could add to her other Eastern traditions or Far Eastern traditions. But through the iconography class, she eventually ended up becoming Orthodox, praise God. And we have people coming from Sufi backgrounds. They've studied certain Sufi traditions, Western writers, a couple of Muslims from Iran. We have, regular secular Swedes that have just, you know, they were 10 years ago, if they're old enough, they were new atheists and they tried that, or they are younger and they have grown up with that type of materialistic atheism with the mother's milk, if that's an expression you have. They've experienced it and they see that it brings nothing but death inside their souls, in their hearts, and in the world at large. And they look for other options. And one quite common way that they go was, at least it was quite common a couple of years ago, was that, you know, they started to listen to Jordan Peterson, and they went on to listen to Jonathan Pajot. And then they Googled Orthodox Church in Sweden and they found us or some other parish. So, and, you know, I was very, very happy to receive them, and I thank God that he made stones speak of the gospel and leading people. I don't care how they come to the church, I'm happy that they come to church, and I'm happy to, you know, show them the fullness of Christ and the healing that Christ can give to people. And, you know, it's amazing to see when the Christian hope is rooted in their hearts and they bring that out from the service and they go out in their ordinary lives. It's amazing to follow them and to get to know them and see the faith bear fruit in their lives. I'm very, satisfied by that.
Absolutely. And we've had a similar phenomenon here where people will listen to Jordan Peterson and then come on to Jonathan Pageau and then come to the Orthodox Church. And this seems particularly strong in the COVID period where people were locked down and listening to a lot of things and maybe exploring other church traditions that they weren't used to and really questioning what is the tradition that I'm part of and what is essential to it because everything was shut down. So it seems like that's not quite as a strong flow right now, but it's still, you do get lots of people that will come in every now and then from that. And if someone is exploring Orthodoxy, what would be your advice to them? Like maybe they're listening to this podcast and they're curious about Orthodoxy, but they don't know what maybe the next steps are. What would be your advice?
Well, it depends on where you come from. If you come from a Christian background, I would give the advice that what you have found in the Orthodox Church is really the pearl of great price. And it is worth exploring or selling whatever you have to buy this pearl of great price. It is worth to travel 2 hours by car on Sunday morning to visit the nearest Orthodox Church and attend liturgy there. It is worth it. It is the pearl of great price. So I would like to encourage people that are looking for a new Christian home to realize that, and you will not be disappointed. Maybe for people that are not from the Christian background, that are trying to explore religiosity at large, I would say that the strength of the Orthodox Church is that you are forced out of your own ego in a very concrete way. I don't think that many other religions are able to do that, especially when you remain your own authority or your own pope or your own guru or what you want to call it. If you come from New Age background, you will recognize that you were your own, the religion that you attended were serving your ego, your own kicks. And if you come from other religious backgrounds, you will experience the same thing. But the Orthodox Church is a life-giving faith, life-giving religion. It is imbued with the life of the Holy Spirit, and it will make out of you the one that God intended you to be, if you give yourself over to it. If you, of course, you will have to, you know, sniff around and get to know it first. But eventually, I think you'll realize that it's a faith that will speak to us as human beings in the most genuine way.
Yeah, well put. I was talking with someone recently, and it seems like in Orthodoxy, you do have this aspect, which is very unusual in the sense that you are actually encountering divinity. And yet at the same time, something that's so familiar because Christ is the fullness of what it means to be a human. And we are all called to be human. And this is something that has degrees of participation. Like we're not fully human right now. We have to grow in our humanity. And so when we actually encounter Christ, we see who we are meant to be. And so it feels very natural while at the same time feeling strange. And it's this mixture of the two things. And it feels like Orthodoxy does preserve this sense of something that's strange and yet familiar at the same time. Do you think that that's a fair way to characterize it, Father Mikhail?
Yeah, yes, I think so. There's something, you know, when you go to liturgy, at least this is my experience, and I know a couple of others that share the same experience. When you go to liturgy, that's our Mass, Sunday Mass, you will not only encounter a beautiful service, ancient service, but you will encounter something that speaks pedagogically, maybe, to your whole being. It will not only be a good sermon or emotional worship or something like that, but it will be something that engages you as a whole person and calls you back to where you belong in the most ontological or fundamental way. This I have never experienced anywhere else. this is really something, you know, as you say, calling back to our origin with God.
Absolutely. Well, that is a wonderful place to conclude our conversation today. So I want to thank you, Father Mikhail. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Max. Thanks for letting me on this podcast. I hope it has been a blessing for all you that are listening.
Hey guys, thanks for checking out that episode of the Orthodox Christian Podcast. If you have a question about Orthodox Christianity, there is a link in the video description that you can check out. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate it if you shared it with one friend or family member. And in the meantime, I hope that you have a peaceful week. Take care.